Welcome back, everybody. This is another episode of Cinema D'Amore. I am Chuck Phillips, joined by
James Reinhardt.
I am Justin Morgan.
And today we're continuing our theme of revenge, a little bit of a twist. Last week with Mandy, the hero gets his revenge, and this week it's a little bit darker. Talking about Cape Fear, and sometimes the bad guy gets revenge.
Or doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't fully get his revenge, maybe, but he tries.
Yeah, I mean, depending on which version, I guess. Did you guys watch both versions for this?
As much as I didn't want to, I did.
I haven't watched the Scorsese version in a long time, and man, I don't know if I just blocked out certain parts of that movie, but I forgot how weird and insane almost all of it is.
Yeah, when it's I got on,
almost the exact opposite of the original.
Yeah, it is.
When I got on my Scorsese kick, and I'm like, oh, this guy's great. When I came across that movie, I was like, what is this? I hated it so
there's
much.
So many, yeah,
and I went back and I watched the original and thought it was great.
Yeah.
And I was like, I never want to watch the remake again. But then I watched it because it was on Netflix. And I was like, oh, that's easy. You know, Chuck's going to be talking about it. I should know what I'm talking about.
It's one of those cases where, I don't know, they like looked at the original and just said, now how can we just change everything and make everything not even be the same at all? Because like the family dynamic's completely different. De Niro's take on Max Cady is, whereas Robert Mitchum's version is very laid back and everything seems very cool about him, his version is just a religious zealot who's just preaching and covered in tattoos of Bible verses all over his body and is quite insane and even talks to God at one point, which is an interesting character trait that he almost pulls more from Night of the Hunter, which is another Mitchum movie where Robert Mitchum talks to God and says, oh, I know, God, I'm doing your work so great, aren't I? Like, it's weird that he takes characteristics from a completely different Mitchum movie for this version of it.
But that also has Mitchum in it.
Yeah.
I know for the family dynamic in the remake, Scorsese, I guess part of the reason, he kept turning it down at one point. I guess part of the reason why is because he thought it was boring that it was a happy family in previous drafts of the script, so that's why they did that. But because I was reading about both versions, I guess Cape Fear is based on a book.
Yeah.
But the remake still doesn't follow the book. It just basically copies
the movie, more or less.
Yeah, because in the book, and Max, it was a court martial, and the character that Gregory Peck plays was Max Cady's superior officer who was testifying against him for raping a girl. And then, obviously, for the original version, based on the novel The Executioners, that's what it is. But, yeah, and but I guess, you know, obviously in the original movie, because of censorship, they couldn't use the term rape, so there's lots of getting around that.
Yeah, I saw the other thing was, yeah, they wanted to change it because they didn't want it to reflect negatively on the military.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they changed it to, it was he's a random guy. I think that's why it's a little bit, I find the original version much more frightening because everything's just implied because they can't say anything. Like when he talks about, when they have like a great scene of him and Robert Mitchum and Gregory Peck sitting in the diner talking to each other, and he talks about how, you know, well, I had a family, you probably didn't know that, and he describes and he says, oh yeah, I took my wife, and oh, we found ways to pass the time, and it's just real creepy the way he says it, because you know what he did, you know, he probably just raped and beat her for, then he says he did it for 3 days, and then he dropped her back off at her house and made sure she'd never tell anybody about it. But that's why it's just way, way creepier, although De Niro and Juliette Lewis's relationship in the remake is creepy for maybe not the same reasons. It's just creepy in general to watch because it's just a 40-year-old guy with a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah.
They push it maybe harder than they really needed to push it. They make it really, really uncomfortable to watch a lot of those scenes.
Yeah, I was going to say someone should have been there to rein Scorsese in because it was supposed to be like a chase scene, but I guess Scorsese thought that scene in the auditorium in school where he's posing as the teacher, that was supposed to be a chase, and Scorsese's like, now let's make a seduction, and I think someone should have stepped in and been like, no.
I I actually think that might be the most interesting scene in the movie.
It is. I would agree that it's probably the most. It's probably the most well acted. It's probably the best scene in the movie. It's just not a scene that. It's so. It has such a weird feel to it that. Like I kind of felt that while I was watching it was this is like really well acted. Like you can tell why the De Niro and Juliet Lewis were both nominated for Golden Globes and Academy Awards. And I was thinking, well, yeah, they're really great acting in the scene, but it just feels so creepy and dirty to watch.
Well, I think what makes it so cringeworthy is not only do you have the predator, but you have that like young, the prey, the young 16-year-old that is, you know, kind of new to, you know, this sexual nature, and she is kind of like falling for his trick. And there's something so creepy about that. I would say most, I found it creepy, and I'm not a parent, but like you try to teach your kids, you know, right from wrong. And this would be like the, what was NBC when they were doing that? Like, how good are your kids in these situations?
No, yeah.
And like, this would be like, if Juliet Lewis was like your child, you'd be like, no,
you're doing all the wrong things. Stop it. Don't talk to him. You should have left.
So, in the original, the lawyer character, Gregory Peck, he witnesses Max Cady assaulting a woman and testifies against him, where I kind of, in the Scorsese version, I kind of think Max Cady has a much more interesting motivation, where Nick Nolte was his lawyer. Nick Nolte found evidence that could possibly have cleared him, and he chose to bury it, so he went to jail.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a little bit. That's one thing that's more interesting. One of the only things more interesting about the remake is, yeah, it feels like in the original. Yeah, I don't think he would care that much. Like, I guess realistically, he probably wouldn't have gone to jail if Gregory Peck hadn't been a witness to it. But at the same time, he kind of also says, you know, why aren't you going after the DA or the judge or something like that? Why do you only care about me? What's the point? It makes it a little bit, I guess, more realistic that you would be angry at somebody if they actually cheated you, not just hey, I saw you doing a bad thing and told someone about it. It was like, oh no, I could have saved you, and I 100% didn't.
Yeah, but it's even brought up where like Nick in the remake, Nick Nolte's like, why aren't you going after a prosecutor? Why aren't you going after this person? And like, Katie goes like, well, they're just doing their jobs.
Yeah.
And you know, you find obviously that Nick Nolte had this report that he and once again he even had an you agree with him. Well, why he buried it? He's like, you know, I saw what he did to that girl. And I couldn't have him go back out on the street, so I...
And Katie's motive is actually a lot better in the remake, because, I mean, I'm sure there's tons of people that blame other people for their problems, but he picked a very technical thing that actually may or may not have, like, lessened his crime.
Yeah.
Lessened his sentencing.
Yeah, this is one of those things where, like, he's not a sympathetic character, but you understand why he's doing what he's doing, where Max Katie in the original is, like, just kind of despicable from start to finish.
He does have that like mysterious element to him where everybody keeps saying like, oh, this character, he's reformed. The plot, we didn't really talk too much about the plot. The Katie character goes away for some time, 8 years, 14 years depending on the version, and comes out and is following the Nick Nolte Gregory Peck character and his innocent family. Just he's like has to protect his family from this possible monster. And I think where I like the original better in the story is how much more subtle it is, where he seems like he could be reformed from the violence, from the rape, but he's just intimidating this guy, and he's not ever really going to do anything besides harass this guy.
Yeah.
Outside, you know, inside the law, harassing this guy as much as he can.
Yeah, in the original, it's... You 100% don't even think that he necessarily has a plan to do anything. You think he's just... Everything just more seems like he just wants to almost just annoy the guy, because he doesn't do anything specifically against him for the first half of the movie. It's not till the midway point, well, after the dog dies, and that it starts getting a little bit more intense. But like in the remake, he's just obnoxious and seems to have some kind of problem with him immediately as soon as he gets there. Like the scene when he's smoking the cigar and laughing hysterically in the movie theater so annoyingly, and then sits outside staring at him, buys him ice cream for whatever reason.
To Problem Child.
To Problem Child. John Ritter's character is just cracking up for no reason whatsoever. Everything about the remake just slightly alters it and just makes it just a bit too insane. And I would say, I think I like the motivation a little bit better, although I guess the family's kind of harder to care about in the remake as well, because none of them necessarily seem like particularly good people. At least Nick Nolte's character doesn't seem like a good person specifically.
They could have made him worse. They could have made him having like an actual affair.
Yeah. But it's implied that he definitely did have an affair, and I think that it probably would have led to one with the clerk that he hangs out with. Like if Max Cady had never showed up, it probably would have led to another affair. Like his wife already has been suspicious of him for a long time, that he's always going out with the girl from work or something like that, so
can't have that happening.
You can't.
Wife does not like that. I think my biggest pet peeve with the remake is it's over-stylized, like, so crazy. Like, it almost feels artificial the whole time that you're watching it. Everything feels surreal. Nothing feels natural. Especially, like, the ridiculous Robert De Niro hanging on the bottom of their car.
Oh, yeah. He just rolls out and looks at the woman standing there and just walks away and goes into the bathroom or something.
But I'd seen, before I even seen Cape Fear, I saw the Simpsons parody of it with Silent Bob clinging to the car. And then when I saw it in college, and for my Scorsese class, I had to write a paper on both versions and which one I thought was better. And I was watching it, and I'm like, wait a minute, is this the movie where the guy clings to the bottom of the car? And then, there's that shot where he's like, as they're running, and I'm like, they did it, hey. But to me, that wasn't the most ridiculous part of the remake. The most ridiculous part is at the end, where he's on the boat with them, and he lights the cigar, and Juliette Lewis, like, sprays the lighter fluid and catches it on fire. And I'm like, well, that's it. That's the end of Max Cady. And he jumps into the river, which is pretty, like, it's a pretty choppy river. But somehow he still manages to, like, perfectly grab onto the boat and climb aboard with third-degree burns and act completely fine. And I'm like, he should have been washed away, even if those burns didn't incapacitate him.
That's why he got those nominations. He was so good.
Yeah, Robert De Niro actually, like,
Well, the cool thing, too, about the lighter fluid is they locked the daughter in this little cabinet that she could have kicked open if she wanted to. And she has matches, so you think her plan is going to be that she's somehow going to light him and then do a match. And it almost ends up being more perfect when he lights a cigar and she just squirts it on his face. And just so violent. And then that river, too. I mean, I know they anchored and he cut the anchor off, but I feel like that storm was so bad. If Robert De Niro didn't show up, they still would have been halfway down the river.
Probably. What does it mean? That river was so bad, like, as soon as he jumped overboard, I'm like, he should have been gone. He should have been washed down the river. But somehow he's, like, his hand is perfectly still coming out of this churning river and grabs onto the boat. I'm like, Max Cady.
He just floated up like Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
I like how the boat is spinning in circles.
Clearly.
And the camera inside is spinning like, the opposite direction.
Yeah, it spins, like, vertically, whereas the boat's spinning, like, horizontally. They're spinning on the wrong axis. That's what Scorsese gets a little ridiculous, but I agree with you. It almost feels like when you said it, like, feels artificial. It reminds me more of like an Oliver Stone film. Like, it feels more like Natural Born Killers or something, which came later, but has that same. But I think at least Natural Born Killers had a reason, I think, to use all of the weird camera tricks and the weird effects, because it was trying to say something about, like, how you view media and how you see videos of people like that. And I at least think it had a reason. I don't know what the reason was for him. Like, he does the weird negative.
Yeah.
Makes the negative image twice on two completely different times. Like, one's just a sex scene with Nick Nolte and Jessica Lange, and it just goes negative. Then she wakes up. I don't even know if it almost seems like it's supposed to be, like, a dream sequence. Like, she wakes up, starts putting lipstick on like she's getting ready to go out. then sees Robert De Niro on the wall, freaks out. And she's like, why did I put lipstick on? I'm like, what the fuck has even happened? Like, what is the... Mm-hmm. I don't understand.
Well, the end, too, with the daughter, where, like, they made her negative.
Yeah.
And then made her red. She looked like she was evil or something.
Yeah, and then it just stops, and you're just like, what are you doing, Scorsese? Like, that felt like, I don't know. I know he had a cocaine habit at one point, and this movie just feels like the epitome of... Just he's trying everything all at the same time.
Well, like, the fireworks scene was ridiculous, where he's on that wall and, like, how many fireworks they had to probably go through. Because he did, like, I don't know, 5 different angles of Robert De Niro on that wall. And then when they're doing the parade, it's just, like, there's so much going on. Like, because Scorsese is like, we need a whole fucking parade.
Yeah.
We need fireworks.
I thought that was a... made me question, like, how long does this town celebrate the 4th of July? Because they have fireworks to one night, then a couple days later, they're like, it's the 4th of July parade. I'm like, was it 4th of July a couple days ago with the fireworks?
There's so many. I have to say, though, we have brought up some ridiculous things, and the thing, in the original version and in this version, I know they both, Scorsese and the original director, J. Lee Thompson, wanted a specific Hitchcock feel, because that's what the original director said. Hitchcock was his favorite director, and that's why he worked with, I think he said the cinematographer was one that had worked with him a lot, and that's why he wanted, they said, hey, we're gonna get Bernard Herrmann to do the music, are you okay with that? And he's like, he does all of Hitchcock's best scores. He's like, of course I want Bernard Herrmann doing it. And I feel like Scorsese's best possible tribute to Hitchcock is when Robert De Niro plays the maid, when he's standing in the kitchen and he's just got his back, like he's going in the fridge, and Joe Don Baker's character asks a question like, whew, it's a hot night, isn't it? And you just hear, and then just, he just whips around. It just looks so
It's a
ridiculous.
Good trick. It's a good trick
it,
shot.
It is perfect. And it just 100% reminded me of Psycho with Anthony Perkins when he just finally reveals he comes in dressed as Mrs. Bates. But when fucking Robert De Niro turns around and he's just in the maid's dress or something like that, and he pulls out the piano wire.
On a side note, Scorsese's best homage to Hitchcock was The Key to Reservia, which is like a 5-6 minute video that he made up about finding a Hitchcock script.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah,
I think it's on Vimeo, and you can see it there. But he does like Notorious, The Man Who Knew Too Much, The Birds. He does a whole bunch of... North by Northwest. He mixes it all together, and it's one of the few things that Scorsese's in and he's really fucking hilarious in, where like they cut abruptly and he's like, that's it, that's where the script ended. I mean, I don't know what else he would have done, so.
But there's a lot of interesting things going on. I would say, and again, another comparison to go with like the original versus the remake is, I know that was another thing they talked about, the censors cracking down on, you can't really show any of the violence. Even at the end, they said even the fighting with Gregory Peck, you can't show him drowning for too long or something like that. They had to cut part of that. But I think that makes it way creepier when he, in the original, when Robert Mitchum picks up the drifter girl and takes her back to the apartment, and just everything about it, the way the music slowly builds and he just walks around the bed and you just know something's going to happen, and then she just tries to take off and he slams the door shut, and then you don't really know, you just know it was that terrible that that the girl says, I don't think I can ever get away from him, I can't tell you anything, because he said this is just a taste of what I have to offer. And I think that was way more frightening to think, like, how bad could he, what could he have possibly done in just like a few minutes time. Whereas in here, in the remake, they show it to you, and it's, again, it's way over the top, way too much, where he just snaps the girl's arm, bites her face, is just way too much, and then it's just another one of those scenes that...
I like when he's talking about butchering, the cutting his last one up like 50-some pieces, and she thinks it's a joke.
She just keeps laughing, yeah.
The original, where he takes that girl back to his place, he's one step ahead of the police the entire time.
Yeah.
So when they have that private eye that's on to him and he calls the, police investigator to go in, I felt that he might not attack that woman, that it was some sort of, like, he had some other idea up his sleeve that he was going to pull, because he kept being in the restrictions of the law. Like, he's the entire movie, he's walked the line and never was outside of it.
That's one thing I like about the original. It's like what Chuck brought up is, you know, it's they had to restrain themselves because of censors, but I think that in a lot of older movies I've seen, that seems to allow for more creativity because you do have to use implication and suggestion, which I think works a lot of the time. But yeah, Chuck also brought up Max Cady in the original was a lot more, seemed a lot more laid back. And I like that because you don't really know what he's going to do next, even in that scene. Yeah, he's like, the entire movie, there's something vaguely threatening about him because he just doesn't seem to give a shit. But you don't know if you know, Gregory Peck is just kind of jumping to conclusions, or if Max Cady does have something up his sleeve. And we do see in that scene that he probably does have something up his sleeve, as opposed to De Niro's not-so-subtle version of the character that we saw.
And it's, I would be interested, because I know the one thing I had seen about the production of it was that I never knew before we were going to talk about the movies this time, is that originally Spielberg was working on Cape Fear, and Scorsese was going to do Schindler's List, which is weird because I don't know, Schindler's List feels so personal to Spielberg specifically because of his Jewish heritage that it feels weird if Scorsese would have done Schindler's List. Like, I almost can't imagine what that movie would be like compared to what Spielberg did with it. But yeah, I know Martin Scorsese, that was like, he respects Spielberg and I think he appreciates what he does, but that's what the screenwriter talked about when they first started working on, when they first brought it to Scorsese. Like, they did like a table read and they were going through and he'd be like, no, I don't like that. No, get rid of that. And the writer was like, every time he'd say, no, get rid of that, that was 100% something I worked on with Spielberg. He was like, he just knew ahead of time. As soon as he read it on the page, he was like, nope, that's a Spielberg thing. I don't want to do it. Like, so it was weird. Yeah, he said.
Well, it does say Amblin in the beginning.
Yeah,
and
Spielberg,
it's the
still least Amblin. Like, yeah. Yeah, Spielberg still produced it, I know. But yeah, it's a weird. I feel like if Spielberg did it, he would have probably more or less he would have just remade the original. I think he probably still would have stuck with, because Spielberg's never really that hard R-rated guy. I think he would have probably kept it all more.
It's coming.
Yeah, we'll eventually get that movie where he just snaps and finally does his bloody movie.
I don't know. I think it was Jaws.
Yeah, he started off as his most violent movie.
He got out,
and then mellowed out.
That kid gets eaten by the shark is like the most gory thing ever.
Yeah, I read a bunch of reasons why they switched. One reason I read was Scorsese thought Schindler's List would do better coming from a Jewish filmmaker, and him and Spielberg decided to swap films. Another thing I read is like Spielberg convinced Scorsese to do Cape Fear because he said it would be a commercial success that would give Scorsese more pull and more control on future projects. And I guess Spielberg went to do Schindler's List, and you know the rest is history of that.
Right, and I can't do all my negative shots during Schindler's List.
Yeah,
it just won't be as cool.
Yeah, so it's just a weird thing that I started thinking about more and more of what would this movie have been if Scorsese hadn't taken over with it. And I read somewhere the only other big difference was that Spielberg wanted Bill Murray to play the Max Cady character,
yeah,
which would have been. It would have been weird. I don't know. It might have worked, but
it might have been good because he might have been more disarming.
Yeah. I think he definitely would have played it as more of the original Robert Mitchum type of just very laid back and very non-threatening. When you see him, he just talks really slowly. He seems very easygoing. Which, again, that's what I think makes Mitchum's performance a little bit better is. You kind of always get a threatening, like, feeling from him, even though he's not specifically doing anything. But it seems like all the characters, like James brought up a little bit, all the characters in the movie seem to just be like, oh, no, he's just a normal guy. You know, Gregory Peck's just freaking out. Whereas it feels like every time, like, from the very first scene where you see Max Cady, Robert De Niro's version is, oh, everyone should 100% be afraid of this guy. He's laughing hysterically like a psychopath. He's just so weird. He's like always like screaming and yelling, and guy's just covered in tattoos of weird Bible verses that he's got all over him.
Even that one scene in the original where they're at the docks and he's like eyeing up Gregory Peck's daughter, and Max Cady successfully provokes Gregory Peck. And then, like, when Gregory Peck hits him, Max Hayes is like, oh, you all saw it, didn't you? You all saw it. Like, you could buy it from that guy being like, oh, I didn't do anything. This man just assaulted me. Where, you know, you look at De Niro's Katie character who, like, seemingly draws attention to himself everywhere he goes.
Yeah, the brightest, like, most obnoxious Hawaiian shirts, like Magnum P.I. He drives the huge red Cadillac convertible everywhere.
Yeah, you, I don't think that scene would have played the same with, like, De Niro's character being like, oh, I didn't do anything. He just, like, everyone would be like, oh, this guy's...
Or it'd be, like, the Spielberg version if it's Bill Murray and he didn't play a threatening character at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The entire time. Like, it was more like the scenario with the dog where, like, I know he killed that dog and he just played it off like, listen, I know I'm in the same neighborhood, but I definitely didn't kill that dog. To the big reveal that it's Bill Murray's crazy.
It also, you buy it, Bill Murray, like, I can see it, because he spends a good portion of his career trying to go serious and dramatic. Even before Lost in Translation of Ghostbusters, he only agreed to do Ghostbusters if the studio would greenlight a drama he wanted to make, a drama that was then marketed as a comedy and flopped.
I mean, Broken Flowers was pretty good.
Yeah.
He's done some good movies.
You know what I mean? Like, he's proven he can do drama, but, you know, even back in the 80s, he was trying to do it, and, like, just Hollywood wouldn't let him.
Now, there are some scenes that are straight-up changes. The scene where they meet at the car where he steals his keys. He steals Gregory Peck's keys. He steals McNulty's keys. I like the way that they play them out differently, where the Gregory Peck character did recognize him, but not until the moment they took the keys.
Yeah.
But apparently Nick Nolte's character couldn't recognize him at all because he's changed so much in his 14 years.
And they both, the one interesting thing that both of these films have is that the character of Max Cady, whether it's Robert Mitchum or Robert De Niro, is smaller in stature than either Gregory Peck or Nick Nolte, which is interesting that they, I know at least, I don't think they did anything really for the original, but I know I saw that Robert De Niro just tried to bulk up as much as he could, and they just told Nick Nolte to lose as much weight as he could, so he just looked thin and looked like he really couldn't stand up to anybody, even though he's like 4 inches taller than Robert De Niro and looks like he should actually be able to take Robert De Niro in a fight.
Mitchum always reminded me of Family Guy, where it was like fat, tough guy that's sucking in or whatever.
Oh, well, yeah, 100% when they're like doing the strip search, and he's 100% like... Yep, you didn't see anything like that. Like, I 100%, because I watched a bunch of Robert Mitchum movies.
Oh, they're gonna say Family Guy.
He's never in, like, he's not fat, like super fat, but he's never like really in shape. Like, he did El Dorado, and it would have only been like 4 years after this, and he 100% like has like a gut, and he's supposed to play a drunk for most of the movie anyway, so I think they probably didn't care, but like, even standing next to John Wayne and James Caan in the movie, they both look super in shape, and he's just like, yeah, I just, you know, I'm just a sheriff. I'm a little overweight, but, you know, these guys are cool. So it's odd. He has an odd body shape. And I do have to say, I think one of my favorite things about the remake, and there's not a lot, is getting the original cast to have cameos in it. And I think the best one, maybe Gregory Peck. Just I like that they had them play the opposites, whereas they had, instead of Mitchum playing a bad character, he plays the police chief, and then instead of having Gregory Peck come back and be some sort of other attorney, which I know he said they offered it to him. They said Scorsese gave him the choice of the ADA character that Nick Nolte works for, the judge that Martin Balsam plays, or a hypocritical Southern Bible spouting attorney, and he was like, that's the role I have to play. Like, Gregory Peck was so excited to play that role because he just wanted to be a ridiculous character. And
now, I like the change, too, in the scene where Gregory Peck's character, like, hires the people to basically beat him up under the boardwalk. And then in the remake version, Nolte's there, like, watching.
Yeah.
And Alex Scorsese's like, we're going to have three people. He's going to overcome all of them. But I do like the scene where he, like, kicks that can and De Niro knows that he's there.
Yeah.
But that was, like, a nice updated scene. I think overall the story of the remake is decent, but like, yeah, that weird artificial whatever you feel to it just takes me out of it.
Not sure what he was going for there. It's just it's very odd. I don't think that's the thing. Is I think De Niro's great. De Niro's best in the scenes where he's not completely out of his mind and just seemingly screaming and saying weird things, which most of the movies he's kind of normal, but it's those few moments when they just, and I think it's just one of those things that because Scorsese and De Niro have known each other so long that I don't know if Scorsese just doesn't necessarily always give him direction, is just kind of, well, you do what you feel is right, De Niro, and just kind of lets him go loose on whatever he wants to.
Now, were you both able to read the De Niro character?
Read the, oh, the tattoos, you mean?
Were you able to read him? Mitchum's joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was I going to say? So, yeah, De Niro's character was, I like him speaking in tongues at the end, if you want to talk about him at his most ridiculous.
When I had subtitles on, he was, like, saying actual stuff, though.
That's weird.
He was, like, quoting hymns and stuff.
I think...
He was, like, singing. They had words for what he was saying. At first, it sounded, like, crazy, like, just gibberish. But it was, like, something about God and his glory, and it when the syllables matched up with what he was saying.
Yeah. I've read that, like, I guess some people have thought that they're hymns, or he's speaking another language, but he's supposed to be speaking in tongues. He's supposed to be speaking in gibberish as he's slowly drowning.
Well, the subtitle guy heard what he was actually saying.
He understands tongues.
I know.
They probably had that's weird.
Lip reader or something.
Yeah, something like that, like, how they figured it out, but it's an interesting thing.
If you want to talk about differences between Spielberg and Scorsese, I feel like for the ending, Spielberg would have stuck closer to the original, which the original is, you know, this family, Max Cady's trying to corrupt this family. He's trying to ruin them to steal their innocence. And at the end, you know, when it seems like the Gregory Peck character is going to stoop to Cady's level, he doesn't. He sticks to the book. He's like, you're going to jail for an even longer time. It's a good ending. It's the hero sick of his morals, where at the end, the entire family's corrupted. Nick Nolte is literally, you know, ape-like at the end on the seashore, like trying to smash him with a rock before he gets swept out to sea. And, you know, the family is kind of,
I think the best thing about that ending, though, was not... I did like that they made him go for the kill, but he missed it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like a... It feels like 10 minutes since the boat totally gets annihilated on this rock and gets totally destroyed. It's like the time machine at the end of Back to the Future. Like, it's just in shreds.
Mm-hmm.
And he's worried about Nick Nolte's character, and you do not even know if his wife and child survived, because you do not see them at all.
She just got pushed off the boat like 5 minutes ago.
I have no idea if they drown or what the hell happened to them. I also thought for a little bit, too, that the remake would have taken the path of... Nick Nolte almost seemed like he could have been dead or out of the game by the time they got on the boat, and the Jessica Lange character might have killed him or took him on, as opposed to the father.
I was thinking that while watching the remake, that I would almost like to see another version of Cape Fear where either the lawyer is a woman or it's told from the wife's point of view, because it does kind of deal with, you know, some subject matter still timely today. You know, in the original, you know, obviously the main character is a rapist, and they talk about how they don't want their daughter to testify against them. They don't want her up there in front of a group of men going through this very painful memory if Cady does get his way of him. And then, you know, in the new one, you know, the whole thing is that Nick Nolte gets a witness testimony that the woman that Max Cady assaulted was promiscuous, and he thought that would, get Cady off. And he goes, just because she's promiscuous doesn't mean she deserved to get treated like that. And he's like, and I didn't want this man hurting another woman, so that's why I buried it. And I would like to kind of see this told not from a male point of view. Maybe the Jessica Lange character is the main character in another version or something like that.
Or you have something from one of the original victims, like they kept them out of both versions.
Yeah.
It'd be something interesting there. Well, the whole family does fight a little bit, but I kind of wish there was more of, like, I don't know, the dysfunctional characters that team up at the end type kind of deal, where they just all, like, teamed up and took them down together. Yeah. They all have their little moments where, like, the mom tries to, I don't know if seduce is the right word, but, like, save her daughter, like, sacrifice herself. And the daughter's the one that does the lighter fluid. Mm-hmm. Like, the daughter could have been the one that had taken him out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought you almost didn't even need Nick Nolte anymore post him trying to see what was going on with the anchor, and they could have just left it like you never saw. But it seemed weird because where they had him like tied up outside the window, it kind of made Katie more fucked up. Like, I'm going to put you in a place where you can see me fuck your wife and your kid.
Yeah, which I think was very much the point. And I, like I said, it's kind of a more downbeat ending where Nick Nolte's literally like, I'm pretty sure it was intentional that at the end he like looks ape-like. Like, he always moves hunched over, or he's like crouched at the edge of the beach like a fucking gorilla. Like, it's very much supposed to be that like he's traded in his humanity, you know, thanks to Max Cady, where, you know, in the original, that character is upright and, you know, very much
so Gregory Peck.
Yeah. So Gregory,
so yeah, Gregory yeah, Peck, yeah, like, I
am not the bad guy.
I beat you with yeah. my righteousness.
I was yes. say, the only movies I've seen Gregory Peck in is this and To Kill a Mockingbird.
In both where he plays an attorney.
Yeah, he's basically Atticus Finch in this.
Like, he's the best attorney
yeah,
ever.
Yeah, the best attorney ever. He will not, you know, give it on his morals, and he has the moral high ground the entire film. Except for, you know, the scene where he pays men to beat Katie up, and then he learns from his mistake and he goes back to being the good person. Whereas, you know, in the remake, the lawyer character, you know, loses all morals high ground. And, you know, his family's kind of left corrupted and worse for that.
If they remade it today, it'd be like a whole motorcycle gang. It'd be like
yeah.
12 people.
That's almost how, that's the other part that's, I guess, kind of like what I think when I see the remake is that De Niro's character almost kind of reminds me of, like, Charles Manson or something. Like, he feels like he would get, like the, he would be, like, a cult leader in that, in the same way that he gets Juliet Lewis to kind of be on his side, more or less, where she starts defending him when it gets brought up around the household of, well, this Max Cady guy, and she's like, well, I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't know what you're talking about. And like, so that almost seems like, yeah, he would have gotten, like, more people on his side somewhere. Like, that he would have got somebody that...
Like
that,
the police or yeah, something.
Yeah, or, like, that would have been an extra thing of, you know, how he always... He would always have an alibi for, well, how'd the dog die? Well, it's because he's got this guy that will do anything for him.
Like, how'd you know about the dog?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've given myself up. But, yeah, that almost, like... Like, or if they almost had someone maybe that he was in prison with that, like, was his cellmate or something, that it was, oh, this guy got out 3 years earlier and I told him to be waiting down, like, he knew where Nick Nolte's character lived or something like that, and told his cellmate, okay, now we're best friends and I helped you out, so you go down and you spot where he is and get a house down there so we can get down there and get revenge or something like that. Like, that's how his character...
like, or something like
or
that.
Something like
I want to hear a character say, or something revenge, like that.
Or something like that. I mean, we don't know how far we're going to take it, but when we'll play it by ear in 3 years when I meet you down there. We'll see if I'm still in the revenge
We'll get
mood.
Down there and then something.
That would be scarier almost, you know, this character that... You know, when he went away, it was just like a lone guy, but he amassed a following in prison.
Yeah.
And now this family is like the target of them.
Never even left prison.
Yeah.
It was
yeah,
just
yeah.
all from
bull. He could get him like from prison, just has all these people. Because that's, like I said, that's what...
The woman that fell in love with him through like...
Isn't this
pen pals people, or whatever the hell?
Yeah, that isn't this that times. Show the following? Isn't this the second season?
It almost kind of is. More. I mean, that is the plot that he...
They made more than one season?
They made like three.
Yeah, I was about to say, they made it like three or four.
But I stopped on after season two, but in season two, what's his name? Joe, the cult leader, is like running the cult from prison.
I've watched so much Dateline, as you guys know, and... There's always people that are like, I saw a Dateline about him and I fell in love with him and I started writing to him and he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
I know he killed those people, but I don't think he meant to.
I don't think you know him like I know him.
Oh, yeah. Charles Manson, even when in prison, he had there was that show Dark Tourist or whatever on Netflix. On one episode, like, the host like goes with a bunch of Charles Manson followers who like corresponded with him in prison, and they were, you know, they were still pretty loyal to him, and I think Charles Manson married a woman that, like, kept visiting him in prison.
He was going to. I don't think it happened.
Yeah. I couldn't remember if it did happen or if he... Because I know, yeah, there's talk about it.
Well, it's like, I watch Making a Murderer, and in the second season, there was this woman that was, like, found, after the first season, got in contact with him and wanted to be with him, but it was really only because she wanted to be on, like, this show when the second season came out. So, I mean, I don't know. That's weird shit like that.
But yeah, that's where I feel like they could probably remake that movie again. That's one thing that the the original director of the first one said that, you know, it's not necessarily a story about a particular time. You could really remake this movie however many times you want, because it'll still be, the ideas in it are still relevant. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, it'd be interesting if they remade it and, yeah, had, you know, maybe, yeah, one of the other victims gets revenge on Max Cady, or like you said, if they made more, the daughter more of the killer of him, like the one that he's trying to actively
or attack soccer, the whole they time. Were on Facebook or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's something they could update, I think, and do another good version, as long as
if you really think about it, there's probably 10 remakes that we don't even know of.
Well, probably. Well, there's it's a universe. Story. Yeah, it's a story of revenge and murder. So I mean, it's one that you could say any number of movies borrows probably a lot of elements from,
like The Simpsons.
Yeah,
borrows.
But yeah, yeah. This, you know, usually there's the story of like the good guy getting revenge. This is you know, the monster that you thought was locked away gets let out and, you know, goes after who it perceives wrongs it.
I think, too, I know it just seems to happen when we compare an original to a remake and we start, like, visualizing what the next remake would be. I would make the Gregory Peck character, like, more of a terrible person. Like, really make it more shades of gray, because, like, Nick Nolte's character is, like, maybe he cheats on his wife. And, you know, he was trying to do a good thing by not showing that evidence about the promiscuous girl. Which just feels very old. Feels very, like, 30 yes. years ago. It's a very weird...
I don't know. Like, I could still see that today if, like, a woman was... Because, like, they even bring it up. They're like... Because, oh, the girl that the clerk is into him when she's attacked by Cady, she's like, I don't want to testify because I'm going to have to explain how much I drank, what was it wearing. She's like, I don't want to do that. And I absolutely do feel like today, in this day and age, like, if a woman was assaulted and then that came out that she had sex with multiple men in the night, I think that definitely would influence some people.
And even the more subtle version in the original where, like, she didn't want to testify at all, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fucked up, but I could still see that happening today.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, look at just, you know, the Supreme Court shit with, what's his name?
Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, Brett Kavanaugh, yeah. I don't want to get into it, but, like, yeah, that's still happened today, so I feel like, you know, Nick
Nolte. You should have, well, I'll get into it a little bit. I saw that funny Cortez video where she's dancing. This mm-hmm. is going to be so old by the time you guys hear this.
Yeah.
But maybe 2 days ago, some anonymous bullshit posted this video that was supposed to be like hurting her in some sort of light, and one of these comedians wrote that you know, back in high school, maybe if she, instead of dancing, she was raping people, maybe she could be on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And
but
terrible, but true.
Is there, what do you even mean? Like, this is nowhere near serious, but I posted on the internet about an embarrassing video I made in high school that got me into film school somehow. So, you know, it is weird, like the weird double standards that, you know, apply. And the bar is set much lower for a white dude like myself.
Yeah. Well, I do think, I'm just like, I'm not agreeing that you're like, the bar is so low with James because he's a white guy. I do think, though, if they did another remake, that might be kind of interesting to have somebody that maybe speaks out against the Cady character and is kind of taken down as, like, the promiscuous person. And
yeah. Like I said, I would love a remake from a female perspective, even a female filmmaker, you know, because we've only had dudes.
Whoa, James.
I'm just saying.
I'm pretty sure they talked to Jason Blum, and he said he can't find any.
He's like, oh, there are no female films.
That was one of
them finally directed one of those Hulu, the New Year's. I think it's the New Year's Hulu horror yeah. film. That's a woman director.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic, but I know I read an article the other day, and I had a similar reaction to what this article was talking about, like a week before I read the article of... It talked about how everyone's celebrating, oh, we had all these great movies for women, like the Bad Moms movies and stuff like that, and that book club that had the older women with 50 Shades of Grey. But the one thing they pointed out was, well, that was great. They were all acting in the movies, but almost none of them were written or directed by women. And I had 100%, I thought, I saw Bad Moms Christmas was on HBO, And I caught, like, the tail end of it. And I was like, I thought it was actually a funny movie. I was laughing at it. And I got to the end, and I was like, well, surely women had to have made this movie. Oh, nope. Nope, completely wrong. Two dudes made it. I was like, what about the original? Oh, nope, same two dudes. I was like, oh.
Bridesmaids.
Yeah, 100%. I'm like.
Paul Feig.
Yeah, it's weird, because that's what everyone keeps pushing, and that's. I'm interested to see the new Nicole Kidman movie, Destroyer.
Yeah.
Because it's actually directed by a woman and has a female woman lead. And surprisingly, an older female woman lead that I don't think she's playing a mother, which seems to be, like, even Winona Ryder, once she hit that age, was like, you're Spock's mother in Star Trek.
She doesn't even, like, age. They have to make her look ugly and every once in a while. They're like, here's ugly Nicole Kidman. Well, bringing it back a little bit, I saw things recently where everybody was attacking Scorsese for, like, or not Scorsese, Robert De Niro. For being, like, saying, like, all these great, wonderful directors that he's worked with, and I don't think he's ever worked with a woman before.
Yeah, but that's not exactly Scorsese. That's not De Niro's fault. That's more the system's fault. Because, yeah, Hollywood, up until very recently, is very much a male-dominated thing. And nowadays, because voices are getting louder, that we're you know, we're getting more female directors and more directors of color, like, you know, like Jordan Peele and, you know, Brian Coogler.
And I think most actors, too, they see the work, and they I want to be with that person.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I hopefully that, you know, these winds of change continue, and we do get more voices like that. But, you know, I don't think – could De Niro maybe use his Hollywood clout to push female filmmakers? He could, but, you know, he was inside of a system that wasn't really encouraging that.
Before you die, before Martin dies, Joe Pesci's in. We're going to do The Irishman. Like – mm-hmm. Can you do it? And then he's like, I'm sorry, I'm gonna go back to Scorsese. I'm tired of this DiCaprio kid. But yeah, it would be nice if eventually it gets past the point. I mean, I think I'll be dead before it. I mean, I think it'll get better. I hope it gets better with, you know, all different types of voices behind and in front of the camera. But I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I know recently, and I can't remember the woman's name because I
don't know
know her. I didn't know her too well, but I know somebody brought up when they were talking about the Black Widow movie, and that's what Marvel was trying to get a female director for the Black Widow movie, and one that they asked her, and I know her. I want to say she was foreign. That's probably why I hadn't heard too many of her movies, but I think one of them was nominated for an Academy Award before for like a best foreign language thing, but. They asked her to make the movie and then assured her that we can get a guy to do all the action scenes if you want.
Yeah, she was like, that. Yeah.
She was like, well, that was very offensive. She's like, I'm pretty sure I could do action scenes. She's like, I might be able to do them better. She said, and she brought up a great point is, have you seen any of these action movies lately? You'll leave with a headache. It's just noise and light attacking your eyes for half an hour at a time. She's like, I get a headache watching those movies. I'd like to do it, which... I feel like would make sense for Black Widow because she's kind of supposed to be more of a stealth spy character anyway. She's not supposed to be necessarily guns blazing, just goes in and wrecks the place. So it's odd that they even bring that up, but which I don't know why. I think the only major female director that they let do action movies, and I don't know why they apparently still have a stigma against doing it with anybody else, but is Catherine Bigelow.
Catherine Bigelow, yeah.
Which she's done a bunch of great movies.
That's because they're quote-unquote dramas.
Yeah. Well, I think the only other thing that she has that nobody else had was that her early movies were produced by James Cameron at the time that he was having...
Don't take it away from her by bringing up
Cameron. That's how she started.
She kicked his ass in 2009.
She did. She got her revenge.
Deservedly so.
She got her revenge for him being a terrible husband.
Deservedly so. Hurt Locker is a great movie.
Hurt Locker is a million times better than Avatar.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I've liked all of her movies. I think Zero Dark Thirty was good. I still haven't seen Detroit. That's the only one I haven't seen yet.
Neither have I.
Yeah. And it looked really good, but...
Well, you're supposed to support her.
I'm trying. I'm trying my hardest.
Detroit got some pretty mixed reviews, but I did want to see it. But yeah, I loved Zero Dark Thirty, and I loved The Hurt Locker. But yeah, get her to do Cape Fear.
Yeah, I'd support it. Any final thoughts on that?
Well, I'm just trying to think of a way to discuss how the revenge plot has changed a little bit from the last one, and I we kind of gloss over it a little bit by just saying that, like, oh, it's the bad guy, you know, seeking revenge. Yeah. I guess the question I have is, what makes Cape Fear interesting as a revenge movie, if you're going to put it through that filter? Is it... because I don't think the revenge of Katie's is interesting as much as that horror aspect of the Gregory Peck character, Nick Nolte character, trying to survive it all. The horror element of, like, can we outsmart this guy? The perspective is really not even with the person that's seeking revenge. It's more with, like...
Gregory Peck would disagree. He said he feels Max Cady is the main character of that film. He said he even took less lines because he felt that Max Cady was the strongest character in the film and that he should not be the dominant personality in the film.
But he's also...
I'm just giving you his opinion.
I don't think it's the filmmaker's opinion, though, or the script, you know, the screenwriter's opinion, because it follows Gregory Peck's character around.
That was the director's opinion. He was the producer of the film.
Doesn't mean he knows everything. Atticus.
Ooh.
It almost might be interesting if it actually followed almost entirely the perspective of Katie getting out of prison and harassing these people. You know? Build it up like they're the mystery. You don't know anything about these characters.
Yeah, or maybe they might be terrible, but yeah, they did some... You find they were right. I guess to me, like, the horror of this revenge is, like... In the last film, Mandy, it's a good person wronged, and in order to get back, they have to become a worse person. Whereas, to me, this is almost that no good deed goes unpunished, where in both films, arguably, Gregory Peck and Nick Nolte were doing the right thing. Sort of. I mean, Gregory Peck obviously unequivocally did the right thing. He testified against someone. And now that person's getting revenge on him for doing the right thing, whereas Nick Nolte didn't do his job, but morally he did what he felt was right by screwing someone over, and now that's coming to bite him in the ass.
A little more perspective would have been nice, too. Like, we know that he was in jail. We know that years of your life is probably going to ruin things. But to be like, you know... I mean, he's a rapist. I don't really know if he had a relationship that would have, like, went sour because of that. But maybe. I don't know. Maybe his family doesn't talk to him anymore. His mom doesn't talk to him anymore. His mom doesn't believe him. You know... Maybe, I don't want to say make him an innocent character, but that, take it back down the route of, like, you know, actually being wronged. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't do it. Someone was an eyewitness against me and I didn't do it.
That was something Steve and I, we brought up about the Elm Street remake, because the Elm Street remake seemed to build it up that maybe Freddy didn't do it, that maybe he was falsely testified against by kids who were coaxed into saying things. And, you know, at the end, obviously, the Elm Street remake, it's like, oh, no, Freddy did.
Oh, he 100% murdered those kids.
Yeah, like, he, you know, in the remake, it was he was a pedophile. And, you know, they're bringing up to whether or not the children were coaxed into saying things that weren't true. And Steve brought up, he's like, that would have been really cool and interesting if he was innocent, if maybe these kids did say things that they didn't understand that ruined this man's life. He's like, that would make Freddy, like, a really interesting kind of wronged character, that he becomes what they lied about him.
And the parents are like, yeah, our wrongdoing wasn't we murdered him together. Mm-hmm. Our wrongdoing was that, like, we framed him for this.
Yeah, and I think that would also be another interesting angle, if Max Cady didn't do something, but, you know, now he's become that thing that they say he is because of that wrongdoing.
Yeah. And not trying to get into too many what-ifs. Mm-hmm. Don't want to go down that route, but... the revenge from, I don't want to say the rightfully wronged person, but, like, he's in the wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe it would have been a little more interesting if they could get the audience to side with him a little bit more.
Yeah, I think they tried in the remake graphically and failed, because there's that scene where he's, like, talking about prison and, like, you know, and Nick Nolte's like, oh, I'll compensate you. And then he starts going into, like, being held down and gang raped. And I'm like, it's a little much, film. I don't know.
Well, they made him, like, the obnoxious movie theater character, like, right off, like, when people saw this in 1991, they could probably pinpoint that exact person in the theater. Like, yeah. That's the guy. That's the obnoxious piece of shit.
He probably, if his character hadn't been, they hadn't made him so ridiculous in the remake, because I agree, they, by having Nick Nolte's motivation changed a little bit to that he did technically do something wrong towards Max Cady's character, and that you do kind of feel, you would feel, you should feel sympathy, but you just can't because of the way De Niro plays him, I guess, is where I would go with that, is that, yeah, maybe they were trying in the script, but the way that De Niro wanted to play the character, which is so over the top and kind of just, yeah, obnoxious and annoying right off the bat, is that's where it kind of halts it. You can't feel bad for him because he is just an asshole anyway.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, James. You said you wrote a paper comparing them and which one you liked better. Mm-hmm. Which one did you like better then?
At the time when I wrote it, I liked the original better. As much as I've been bashing the remake, a few guys, when I rewatched
them, his eyes are rolling all over the place. He cannot make eye contact with us.
The remake is ridiculous and unsubtle, but I kind of enjoyed the remake a lot more this time around. I liked the original a lot. Like, I don't want to knock the original, but I liked the remake. And I think I liked it because of that kind of downer ending where he does kind of corrupt this family. And I agree with Scorsese in a sense that, like, a happy family I find boring. And I was kind of more engaged with the remake, even though I agree with all your criticisms of it, where it is ridiculous and kind of unsettled. And Scorsese and De Niro's performance, I do think, lacks the subtlety that Mitchum brought to the role. But for some reason, like, there's something about the remake that kept me, like, a little bit more engaged. But I don't want to knock the original, because I think the original is great, and I do love the original film.
Yeah, the original has this, like, great noir feel to it. Chuck knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I think the restrictions just kind of help it stay very, very interesting. If it wasn't interesting, then nobody would want to remake it. Or no one would be talking about it.
Yeah.
It's weird because I love Scorsese. I would say 99% of his movies, and it's probably my least favorite movie of his.
Yeah, I would say
it's pretty low.
Yeah, I would say as much as I liked the remake this time around, I still consider it one of Scorsese's weaker films, if not his weakest, maybe.
Maybe one day we'll just do weak films by great filmmakers.
So weak.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like part of another reason why I don't know, maybe I didn't like this one as much, is he did this one pretty close after he would have. Well, no, it's probably maybe 10 years apart from when he did King of Comedy, which I feel is a much better take on a character that's kind of supposed to be kind of over the top and crazy. He's kind of supposed to be obnoxious because he wants to be a great talk show host and comedian, so he's trying to. He's always trying to make himself more of, like, an obnoxious, funny man character. And it kind of plays, I think, a little bit better than in this, where they just have him playing it, but seemingly for no reason.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to have a reason for why he just wants to be so obnoxious.
King of Comedy does not have, like, that really weird artificial feel to it, though.
Mm-hmm. No, that's, I think...
Except for, like, when he hears, like, the audience, like, clapping for him and stuff like that. But, so I'm going to lower the bar greatly next week with my pick. I'm going to do Revenge of the Nerds. I was talking to Chuck in the car earlier on the way over to James's house. That's where we're recording today's episode. And I said I think I really, really squandered my pick very, very early on. I think it'll be interesting because I have not watched that movie since I was 12. And I thought it was hilarious at 12. And I feel like that'll make for an interesting discussion next week.
Yeah.
And that's a revenge.
That'll be interesting.
Yep. But, all right. Well, everybody hopefully knows that we are Cinema Du More. We're on Cinema Du More on Facebook, at Cinema Du More on Twitter. I'm at JJMorgan19.
ChuckFinn66.
James Reinhardt.
Please subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Rate and review us. And thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thanks. And we also have another episode coming soon, don't we?
Go yeah. for it.
Yeah, the Golden Goldblums. That's official title pending. But our big end of 2018, start of 2019 quiz show episode, that is also going to be online. So keep your eyes open for that. That should be fun.
We'll see you there.